CBS, Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. Unequal outcomes. That is one way of talking about the disparity between those among us who are very rich and the rest. I learned from two professors writing most recently in Nature magazine, that is the peer-reviewed top of the pile in Europe of science and science reporting. Professor Roger Wilkinson, emeritus and visiting professor of social epidemiology at the Department of Health Sciences, University of York, University of Nottingham, Northumbria University, and University College London, and Professor Kate Pickett, professor for epidemiology at the Department of Health and Sciences at the University of York, that never have we seen such unequal outcomes and disparity between incomes as we do now here in the 21st century with the internet, with artificial intelligence coming online. However, there is a remedy. First, we come to the problem. Professor Wilkinson, I begin with you because social epidemiology, I'm not familiar entirely. I believe it has to do with the fact that you can compare and contrast the different nations, different sovereign states, different groups with each other. What do you learn in putting that all these countries together? What do you learn that is surprising to you after all these years, Professor? Good evening to you.
Well, of course, most of the studies of people's health are individual studies. So you learn about their characteristics and how they affect health, smoking and diet and so on. But it's what we've concentrated on are international comparisons, looking at the influences of whole societies on health. I sometimes think of it as factors in a society which make everyone less healthy, make it harder for everyone to live well. And in fact, our interest in inequality, we find that bigger income differences is a social stressor affecting health and many other outcomes.
Different incomes. You've guided me, your piece guides me, to a piece on the UK and, in general, executive pay. I've known for years that executive pay on Wall Street is way out of proportion to reality. I've known that for years. 132 times the average or whatever fantastic number it is. However, I've not looked at what that creates for the rest of the society. Is it accepted understanding now in epidemiology that that vast difference between ordinary pay and executive pay creates anxiety for everyone, puts pressure on the culture, introduces contradictions that can't be answered? What is the general opinion of that income inequality, Professor Wilkinson?
Well, it increases the importance of social class and status differences. Everyone becomes more worried about how they are seen and judged by others. It increases the feelings of superiority and inferiority. And with that, our sort of sense of self-worth becomes more problematic. It raises the belief that some people are worth much more than others. And so all the self-doubts about what do people think we are worth.
If I can come in, I think the evidence that social status affects health is very strong and robust, and social epidemiologists have known about this for quite some time. Social status matters, social support and social networks matter, social cohesion matters. All of these have very strong effects on an individual level on our health. So if you have friends, if you have high social status, your health is better. What we have done is really widened the lens and just looked at whole societies. What happens when social status differences increase? How does that increase the chronic stress in the population as a whole? And what we uncover are the health effects of those big income gaps. And I was really interested in what you said about being aware of those differences in income on Wall Street. Those haven't always been the case in America. Up until the 1970s, top executives made about 20 times what the average employer made in their companies. It's only really since the early 1980s that we've seen that huge takeoff of top incomes in America, so that it's now as unequal as it was back in the sort of the gilded age of inequality. So it's not a constant. These things do change, and you can see the changing impact of income differences on health over time, as well as between different countries.
Professor Pickett, I want to press this point because the illustrations accompanying your piece in Nature magazine, including a shot of a photo of the homeless camped in downtown Los Angeles. And if I observe correctly, that photograph is meant to match with what you've published to be a surprising consequence of the income inequality, of the disparity. Homelessness, imprisonment, violence, drug abuse, COVID-19. We say they're victims of fentanyl, and we blame China or we blame Mexico. But what the case here makes is that that homeless camp, and there are tens of thousands of them in California, you know this, the reporting from San Diego to the north of the state is constant. That homeless camp is a consequence of that Wall Street disparity. In other words, do they match up as the income inequality has grown, homelessness has grown? Does that make sense, Professor Pickett?
It does, in that inequality is also related to poverty, levels of poverty, including extreme poverty. But also some of the homelessness, the street homelessness that we see across unequal countries is a consequence of the higher prevalence of mental illness and related addictions, the so-called diseases of despair, that are themselves increased by high levels of inequality.
It looks as if, although the poor are the people who are most affected by inequality, the vast majority of the population would do better in a more equal society, by which I mean they might live a little bit longer, they'd be less likely to become victims of violence, their children would be less likely to become seriously involved with dangerous drugs. In that sense, a large majority of the population, not just the poor, would do better in a more equal society.
Let's look at the chart that you provide, Nature provides, unequal incomes. Professor Wilkinson, in the best example of a culture, a sovereign state, but a culture that is doing well in terms of the Gini coefficient, less gap between the high and the low, Norway, Denmark, Finland, and Sweden, that's Scandinavia. That's homogenized until recently with the influx of migrants all over the world. Societies are changing. What is it that they do that makes them more equal, Professor Wilkinson? And does it show up in a diminution of the stressors you talk about? Is there less homicide per capita? Is there less childbirth troubles per capita?
Certainly, it shows up in those factors. I mean, there's much less obesity. The prison populations are lower in those countries. Norway, for instance, compared to the United States homicide, United States homicide is 11 times as high as Norway. It makes a huge difference. We're not talking about 10 or 20% more or less of a problem. We're talking about 4, 5, 6, 7, sometimes even 10 times as much.
Professor Pickett, I come to the other end of the unequal incomes. We've already mentioned it. The United States, in fact, it's so other end, it's not really on the same scale as everyone else. Is there an explanation for this? My country doing the worst of the worst in terms of violence towards its own citizenry?
I think it's really interesting if we look historically. So if we looked at the position of the United States on a graph like that a few decades ago, if we looked just after the Second World War, for example, you would have been one of the more equal countries among the richer countries in the world. And at that time, if we'd looked at how you ranked in terms of health and well-being, you would have been at the top of the ladder, at the top of the scale. So you've gone from being a much more equal society, doing very well in the international league table of health and other outcomes, to becoming much more unequal, and having a much higher level of health and social problems as a consequence of that. And what we see across the developed world, if you will, is a rise in inequality that takes off around the beginning of the 1980s across multiple different countries. And what you're seeing there is the impact of the neoliberal ideology and its impact on the economy. So suddenly we deregulated markets, suddenly we freed up markets to do as they would. There was much less state intervention, and that allowed top incomes to rise in an uncontrolled manner. We saw the takeoff of inequality, and then we see the consequences of that over time.
If I understand correctly, Professor Pickett, this would explain a deal of why healthcare costs have climbed outside of everybody's estimation of what we need. The hospitals are overwhelmed. The Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurance is not adequate. We're not a National Health Service country. We're much worse in that the well-to-do can have what they want and everybody else get in line. You get the worst outcome. That, too, would be an historically based problem, if I understand you correctly. That was not always the case, and it is now.
That's true. And, of course, we need good healthcare systems and hospital systems in particular when we're sick. But if we look at the health of populations, what we're usually looking at are the consequences of the broader social determinants of health and the reasons why more people get sick or don't get sick in different societies, rather than differences in the treatments that are available to them. So, you know, you need good healthcare when you're ill, but what you really need is to be able to live in a society that maximizes health potential, that has the benefits of preventing people from becoming sick in the first place.
I'm speaking to Professor Wilkinson of the Department of Health Sciences at University of York, University of Nottingham, Northumbria University, University College London, and Professor Pickett of Epidemiology, Department of Health at University of York. When we come back, what is to be done? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.